Okay, Councillor, to make a start, just like to welcome everyone here this evening. Just a few things I need to read out before we start the meeting. So members of the public should remain seated throughout the meeting and should not speak. Everyone should ensure their mobile phones are either turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio recorded, except where the committee is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. I would remind members of the committee of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they may have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the table for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. Okay, any apologies? Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Councillor Trina.
Janine Helen, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any declarations of interest?
Myself and there still remain shared the last item.
Okay. Okay. Item number three then is the action sheet arising from last month's meeting. Michael.
Okay, Chair. I think most of the actions are moving on. Quite a number have been taken off since the last meeting because there have been actions. So, any questions?
Pilot.
Yeah.
Just, was there any update on Mullaban Community Centre lease? I know we were discussing about it the last time. Is there anything new on that?
Not that I'm aware of at this point, but I can get Janine to contact you tomorrow.
Okay, happy to move on. Okay, then we would like to welcome Craig Comby here, who's from the Motor Neuron Disease Association and is going to give us a presentation in line with the motion that came to Council some time ago. So thank you, Claire, for attending tonight.
Thank you. Is that all right?
Is it colder? Yeah, that's whatever suits you. No.
First of all, I just want to thank everybody here for inviting us along to the council meeting this evening, and really it was ahead of yourselves adopting the MND Charter, and I wanted to let you know a little bit about the condition, because it's a very rare condition, and really what you're signing up to when you adopt the Charter in a couple of weeks' time. And basically, the adoption of the MND Charter, which you can see here, is really a navigational map of what we want to achieve for our people with motor neuron disease and their constituents in this area. So the right to an early diagnosis and information, the right to access quality care and treatment, the right to be treated as individuals with dignity and respect, the right to maximise their quality of life, and that carers of people with MND have the right to be valued, respected, listened to and supported. And really the Charter and adopting the Charter was initiated as a campaign across the UK where councils really have hands-on responsibility for health and social care provision. And although that's not the case in Northern Ireland, you as councillors really still can be very influential in terms of influencing the infrastructure that's there available to our people with this condition in your area, for example, in terms of housing and housing stock that's available. You can be a kind of person who raises awareness about the condition for your constituents and act as an advocate for them. And really, unfortunately, for many aspects of the Charter, these aren't achieved in most areas of Northern Ireland, and there's lots of different reasons for that. So before we go on to look a bit more in depth at the condition, I'll just explain briefly what it is. So motor neuron disease is a progressive neurological condition. So it's progressive in the fact that it deteriorates over time and in very many cases quite rapidly. And it's neurological because it's to do with your motor neurons. So neurons are basically the signals that are sending messages from your brain at this moment to sit upright and not fall over, to be able to hold your pen, to be able to write, and many things like drinking your cup of tea earlier and being able to swallow and breathe all depend on your motor neurons. And for some reason, in some people, this goes wrong. So there's two different types of motor neuron, and this is only relevant really because depending on what type of... Why is this? I just keep moving on. It keeps going on its own. Yeah. So I'll just set that down. Maybe. So the two different types of motor neurons. So we've got the upper motor neurons and the lower motor neurons. And your signal goes from your brain to somewhere along your spinal cord. And that's an upper motor neuron. And when it exits your spinal cord to go to your muscle, it becomes a lower motor neuron. So that's relevant when we talk about the different types of motor neuron disease in the next few slides. And as I said earlier, motor neuron disease is an all-encompassing condition. So it affects every aspect of life, how you sleep, breathe, walk, talk, eat, and think. And therefore it can be obviously very devastating for people who actually experience the condition. And some things you may not know or may know with motor neuron disease, so it's a very rare condition. So there is a possibility that a GP in his lifetime will never meet someone with motor neuron disease. And that makes it a very tricky condition to deliver a good effective service to, because it's very hard to accumulate expertise in the condition if you're only seeing one of these people every 2 or 3 years. It usually affects people between 50 and 70 years of age, although we have people as young as 29 who have the condition. And unfortunately, until this date, we have no cure. And the Motor Neuron Disease Association UK, you know, really invest about £13 million a year into trying to find a cure for the condition. The cause is unknown. So there's lots of different theories about the cause of this condition. And even on the radio this afternoon, they've found out that professional football players are 4 times more likely to develop motor neuron disease as a condition, and 7 times more likely to develop dementia, apparently. But I was really interested in the motor neuron disease statistic. So whether that's to do with high impact sport or whatever, we don't know. There's an average of 2 to 5 years life expectancy with this condition, and it depends on what type of motor neuron disease you have. So if you have a type of motor neuron disease, it does affect the upper motor neurons or the lower motor neurons separately. You tend to have a bit longer. But 6 out of 10 people in Northern Ireland, so therefore the 12 out of the 20 people in the Southern Trust area, would have a type called ALS, which involves both your upper and your lower motor neurons. And the average life expectancy for that is, I'd say, 2 to 5 years. The type of MND that has least well prognosis are those people who have bulbar type MND, and that's people whose speech and breathing is affected first as their first symptom. So they would get between 12 and 18 months really. Out of every 10 people, one person it will be a familial condition. So they will know somebody else in the family who's had it, and that becomes very obvious when you start your case history with the client. And 9 people it's sporadic, and as I say, we don't really know the reason for why MND occurs. And in the last 26 years, there's really only one evidence-based treatment, and that's a drug called Riluzole, which has been proven to buy a person 3 to 4 more months of life expectancy. So it's a pretty bleak diagnosis, to be frank, unfortunately. So we can expect out of the 1.8 million people in Northern Ireland that there's roughly about 124 people in Northern Ireland with this condition. And that small number makes it difficult in very many ways to get the resources and the response to services that we need. And in some ways it makes it easier because it's a smaller number of people, and the association and the branch in Northern Ireland, we would know every one of those people who has the condition here. That's quite a hard slide probably to see, but I know you were sent them around before the meeting. So it just shows the all-encompassing nature of this condition, the really resource-rich condition it is, and the fact that it needs the amount of workforce that can be involved with this person during this short period of their life. So 41 people, out of that 124 people currently in Northern Ireland, 41 or a third of them will have passed away by this time next year. Half of them will have passed away in 18 months' time. 97 will experience communication difficulties, and 82 will experience swallowing difficulties. 90 of them or more will require a wheelchair. 43 will experience some cognitive or difficulty or change in their thinking, and around 19 people will actually have a formal diagnosis of dementia, and 99.9% will actually probably die of a respiratory disease. So it's just that, although it's a very kind of downbeat slide, it's just to emphasise the need for the type of immediate quick response we need in all these different areas of the and lack of involvement in
Thank you, Freya. I think we'll all agree that was a very informative presentation. No, certainly myself as working in the health and social care environment, it's something that I've never really come into contact with. I'm sure Councillor Gallagher would agree, you know, in our field of work we're dealing with chiropractics and things like that, that we know what the restraints are at the minute. So obviously in this situation it's felt even more where you're under such a time limited situation. So really, really appreciate that. I'll open up if anybody's any questions or comments for Crea. Councillor Walker.
Sure, thank you very much. And Crea, I want to thank you for your presentation. I thought it was excellent and interesting. A couple of points you raised there, you had mentioned about footballers, maybe four times likely. Would that maybe be because you say there's an upper and a lower? Would it be maybe because heading the ball a lot, head contacting that with the ball? There was a well-known footballer who passed away there 5-6 weeks ago in Scotland with it. So there was, and I took an interest then in that disease. And, you know, it is heartbreaking when you read up on it and the way it affects you and that. But the question I would like to ask is, does the department fund your own group, the Northern Ireland group, in that do you get any money from government. I do know that Stormont's not up in Rumlin at the minute. It's in the bends. But does, through the permanent secretary of that, fund yourselves in the excellent work you do? Because I believe your organisation should be funded with the work that you do in that. And I would just like to know that there. Do you be funded by the Department of Health? Or is it just donations you rely on?
Councillor Walker, you just turn your light off then, and Councillor McKevitt.
Yeah, thanks very much, Jefferson. Thanks very much for your presentation. Something I have had an interest in. I actually did know somebody who had motor neurone disease, and you spoke in your presentation about the diagnosis and how slow it can be. And just a lad who was an electrician by trade, and his first symptom was he couldn't pick up a screwdriver. And it took an awful long time for a diagnosis, and a diagnosis that you have rightly pointed out, you know, 2, maybe 3 years, sometimes 5, do you know what I mean? And getting guidance and all the rest, sometimes when a family do face this, in a previous job I was the chairperson of the muscular dystrophy all-party group in the Assembly. And something similar, you know, trying to get things set up, trying to get NICE to approve drugs that will improve and help families and the patients drastically, even if it is only for, in this case, 3 to 4 months. But they have a specialist nurse for muscular dystrophy, and I'm not joining the two together, and I'm just wondering, is there any there for the motor neuron? Is there a specialist nurse around Northern Ireland, or is that something that we can work? Is there an all-party group? Because they do still sit, even though the Assembly's not there. Is there one for... Absolutely. Oh, and symptoms and all of that. And as you say, it's in a GP in his lifetime. And that's probably your first protocol would be to go get an appointment with your GP. You know, like, as you say, it could go through a whole life experience in that job and not see one person through the door that has been diagnosed with that. And that, you know, and, it's something else that even gain the experience for any doctor to do that, you know. But it's like everything else. Only for the fundraising that's done, and it's usually by the families that have actually had the diagnosis, or they know somebody, or friends or neighbours that actually keep the funding going. But this wee booklet actually is very, very helpful, and I'd like to thank you for giving that, something that you can throw in your handbag or whatever, you know, because as local councillors, and you rightly pointed out, there's doctors not filling in the D forms that it takes you away from the system and there's still more, do you know what I mean? And maybe that's something that we could highlight to GPs, do you know what I mean, is to be maybe more sympathetic for those that have just had that diagnosis, because to go through that type of assessment, when they have had a diagnosis of fatal diagnosis, do you know what I mean, and to deal with that on its own, and everything that goes with it, as you say, adapting the house, or even children and how children, if the parents are, because they're not just 50 to 7 year olds, do you know what I mean, there has been diagnosis, you rightly point out your presentation, of people in their late 20s, early, and they're getting maybe more common as well, you know, so, but this is a great booklet, and I want to thank you for your presentation, just highlighting again, and maybe we should be looking into parties, maybe for getting an all-party group up and running in the assembly, even for motor neuron as well, because, you know, sometimes paths can cross when it's to do with muscle tones and it's to do with everything else that, you know, maybe in where muscular dystrophy something, do you know what I mean? I'm assuming that something similar expertise is needed, like the physio therapist, the occupational therapist and all that there. So maybe that's something that could be joined on into that group, something to think about in the future. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Can I take Oliver?
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, I acknowledge sort of Liz working within the health service himself. I think one of the, I mean, I don't know, I suppose really the privilege I've had is to actually work with the team, with a gentleman who unfortunately is no longer with us, and the impact that had on the whole family unit. And you mentioned there regards to the finances. The gentleman in question, he had said to me, and it's something that's always struck to me, that he said he hoped he passed away before his money went. Because, which leads on to the next question, because with motor neurons and stuff like that, and the care package that he had got was quite a large package, which he then had to add to that on the private aspect of it. And one of the things was, and with the pathway there, one of the things that we kind of want to ask is, has the health boards of the trust acknowledged the impact? Because whenever, I was really speaking from experience, it isn't a, how would you put it, a mainstream, a normal, and it has an impact throughout. And it's about that recognition. It's not being recognised within the trust. And I think that's something that needs to be brought in. And information times like this and bringing on the charter, such as something that has been needed for a long time. Well, the other question I wanted to ask was, has Housing Executive, or have you been involved with Housing Executive, regards to the housing issue? Because I know it can be an issue. I know with some folks are private, but is that how that it works?
Thank you. Councillor McMurray.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick question. Does the well-stated lack of neurologists within Northern Ireland at the minute, is that something that is impinging upon diagnosis? I mean, Councillor Gallaghan came into a great grasp of sort of the wider services provided, but you know, that's sort of being right at the top. Is that something that's a stress at the current moment?
Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, just to say a prayer to yourself and your colleagues, you're very welcome tonight, and thanks for your presentation. Obviously, you do a lot of voluntary work yourselves, so we'd all thank you for that as well. Obviously, Billy touched on Fernando Rixon, the footballer who passed away there lately, and if anything, I follow Scottish football myself, and from the time he was first diagnosed to passing away a few weeks ago, you could see it very clearly played out in the press, and it's nothing that highlighted the how serious and horrible an illness it actually is, but I suppose it raised and highlighted the illness to a large extent, but I suppose there's that many issues in the district illness-wise and all that there, but unless you're personally touched or involved in them, you don't really know the ins and outs of them, and I suppose that one particularly brought it home to anybody that didn't. But I suppose you mentioned the fact that the council had adopted the charter, and other than us using the council to highlight the issue, what else is there that we could do?
That's something maybe for us to think about then, and maybe bring forward, and we can keep in contact with you, Shafley, if that would help. But I'm sure there are lots of other things.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just briefly, I want to thank you, Claire, for taking the opportunity to come and make your presentation before us tonight. There's no doubt motor neurons disease is a very cruel disease. The way you see a loved one, their condition deteriorate. And whilst I haven't had any family affected by it, thank God, and I've certainly known people that have been affected by it, and you know, to see that impact on themselves and their family, it's a very, very cruel end for anybody. But certainly, you know, I'm thankful that there is groups such as yourself there to offer that type of support to families. And it is unfortunate that we don't have an executive at the minute where we could, you know, try and push for additional support to be offered in terms of fighting this disease and trying to highlight it. You did mention about the article, about the report earlier on about footballers. I actually hadn't heard a bit about motor neuron disease. I had heard about the dementia impact. But certainly that wasn't something that I was aware of, so that's interesting in itself as well, and something that we should be conscious of, you know. But rugby is right, yeah. And certainly people like himself and Fernando Rixon that have been mentioned, they have, you know, been played a vital role, you know, in highlighting the disease. But certainly, listen, thanks again for all that you do, okay?
Thank you. Just one final thing, I suppose, for myself as I'm sitting here. Would you, I know from working in a trust and living in a different trust, that trusts do things quite differently. Would you find that there are differences between the trusts then of how they deal with them, and maybe looking at what the best practice is? It's something that we could maybe look at lobbying to harmonise across trust areas. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I think, I suppose the reason to make the point is because, you know, this council covers two different trusts as well, and, you know, somebody maybe, like Councillor Mickey Larkin, one of my Sinn Féin colleagues, who brought the motion to council initially, and I know Drummond Tee, where he represents, has been affected by MND. I think there's been a number of people in that area, and they've done a lot of fundraising in relation to that. So you might find that if there's a number of people in the one area but could be sitting in two different trust areas are receiving completely different treatment. So I think that is something that maybe we could be focusing on as well. I'm trying to make sure that it's equitable across all our trust areas if possible. So that's good to know. But thank you very much, Cray. I think we've all really got a lot out of your presentation. Thanks for taking the time. Okay. Thanks a million. Okay. Thank you, councillors. Item number 5 then we'll move on to, and it's the DEA HORA update report.
Yep, thank you, Chair. In Janine's absence tonight, I'll be taking her report. So this is the standard monthly report on the DEA action sheet. This month you have Rhuallan, Sleep Group and Crotleaf.
Opposed, Councillor Rannett. Second, Councillor McGavitt. Any matters arising?
Sorry. Just I'm asked about the dementia bus and that virtual tour for the Crotleaf area. Is there any dates available to that, or is that?
I'm not aware of the dates yet, but as soon as we get them, I'll get them to you. I'll talk to Janine when she's back tomorrow and see if we've got dates yet.
Yeah, it's just there was great feedback from the holiday years that have had it, and it's been said that it was money well spent for giving ordinary people who. What it's like to have dementia and giving them the greater awareness. So it's something that we're keen to see right across all the years.
Thank you. Item number 7 then. Sorry, 6. It's the review of the operation of the DEA forms.
Thank you, Chair. There are new terms of reference have been tabled there this evening. This came out of my meeting with my management team when we round all the DEAs and talked to them about changes that we'd like to see. So coming out of that, there's a number of changes, mainly for clarity. The ones that aren't really clarifications are about the networking requirement, which was that it was seen to be too restrictive. A number of the DEAs are having difficulty filling those posts, so we're easing that a little bit by saying 3 independent groups can nominate a person, and we'll see if that helps to fill the post. The other one is to bring the independent members in line with the council term. So from next year's election, these members will all stand down and have to be renominated and go through the application process again. It's the proposal on that. And the other main one is to say clarification around how things are actioned coming out of the DEAs.
To clarify on the independent members, and I didn't pick up right, are you talking that the ones that are in the situ now stay for this term and it's 4 years' time to change?
Yeah. That's our proposal at the minute. Yeah.
Proposal and seconder for that? Proposal. Who's second? Sean. Okay. Any matters arising or anybody else? Okay, thank you. Item number 7 then is regarding the remaining units at St. Vale Community Centre.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, this report is to seek permission for us to go out for expressions of interest in Building B and the remaining part of Building C, which are not being used by the community group at this point. The community association have had a number of inquiries about being able to lease those buildings or do something in them, and we have had inquiries as well. So the only fair way to do this is to go out for expressive interest in the local papers and see where we go from there. Obviously, that report will be brought back to you at that stage.
Yeah.
Chair, can I make that a proposal?
Yeah, thank you. Seconder.
Chair, I can't second because I'm not a member of the committee, but I do welcome the paper because it is important, because as a local council we are aware of the vacant units and people are back, you know, can they not be used, but we welcome that paper and look forward to seeing it as presented.
Have you just come in, Councillor Andrews? I didn't even see you.
No, I've been here.
I didn't even see you. Okay, thank you then. So that's proposed and seconded. Thank you. Okay, then, item number 8, the financial assistance update.
Okay, once again, Chair, thank you. This is the, as we've done previously, to go out early now for next year's financial assistance call one. The main idea behind this, as members will recall, over the last couple of years we've done this. First year we went out, a number of groups complained that they didn't have enough time to prepare for, in particular, their Easter events, depending when Easter falls in the year. So the list are community events and festivals, summer schemes, Irish language, local biodiversity enhancement, tourism events, tourism marketing partnership fund, and minor grants. So also the active and healthy communities community engagement grants. So that's what we'll go out and call one. And as I say, the main purpose of that is to allow groups to plan for their events if they're where they're early on in the year.
Okay. Proposed, Councillor Murray. Seconded, Councillor Hart. Thank you. Okay. Item number 9 then is the Carers Alliance eligibility for concession charges. Just came out of the motion last month. So, Paul, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Members will be aware of the notice of motion that was brought to AHC committee in September in relation to Carers Alliance being recognised as a means tested benefit. We're proposing that this is considered as part of the rate assessments process and the review of the schedule of charges and implemented as of the 1st of April 2020. That's the recommendation.
Thank you, Paul. The proposal and seconder.
Sorry, can I just come in now, please?
Yeah.
I was in contact with my colleague, and the intent of that motion was to proceed with immediacy. Would it be, and given that the that it's sort of agreed in contact, there would it be possible to bring that in, to propose that it's brought in immediately, as opposed to wait till 1st of April?
Well, essentially, it's up to the committee at the end of the day. However, I suppose officers are, just because there's potential rates and impact implication with it, that's why we said the 1st of April. However, it's up to the committee.
Chair.
Okay.
Chair,
are you proposing the recommendation? Are you proposing that it goes immediately or that your recommendation? Okay. We second her.
Just before I speak on it, I just want to clarify, I presume there's no budget been allocated for this, for the immediate effect, so while I agree with the sentiment of what Councillor Brown in his initial motion was saying, like, you know, at the end of the day, I very much support the need to provide some sort of respite for people who are looking after people and caring for others every day to get a chance to look after themselves. But I believe if we're going to do it, we need to do it right and we need to cost it. And I would propose that we support the motion on the basis of what's been proposed in the recommendation tonight, on the basis that, you know, I think to be prudent and to make sure that we cost it, because, you know, we don't know how many people will avail of this and what the impact would be. I agree with the sentiment that the sooner we implement this, the better, I think, by being able to do it in the next financial term and plan for it accordingly would be the prudent way to go. And when I agree with the sentiment of the motion, I believe we should plan for it accordingly and make sure that the scheme is done right, because I think there are issues around identification of those people in relation to being able to provide
proof that they are on the CARES advance, and how do you manage that and make sure that we implement it properly. And then I think we'd be doing the people involved in it justice. Plus, I also believe it creates an opportunity to market to those people that this opportunity is now available. I think if we plan between now, it's only a number of months between now and the beginning of the next financial year, we can do this right, and I think it'll send out a very positive message. And not only that, it means the programme can be sustained.
Okay. We've got two proposals before taking Councillor Walker's two proposals. Okay, so we've Councillor McMurray's proposal not to accept the recommendation and to proceed immediately, and we've Councillor Savage's proposal to accept the recommendation.
I was going to second Councillor Savage's.
Okay. Before we move on, can I just check? I need to check if I've got a seconder for Councillor McMurray's. No, okay, so it's Paul. So we've got a proposal and seconder then to accept the recommendations.
Yes, no, I would second that motion, and our party totally supports it. So we do, and Councillor Savage is right. You know, there's no costs for it to implement it immediately, and I think this is the more sensible approach. But I am disappointed in relation to motions. Motions are presented at council, and I think it's sad when the presenter of motions at council, when they're transferred to a committee, can't come along in person and deal with that motion themselves.
You can.
You know, they can't.
They can.
No, I mean, they can't come along. They should have been here tonight.
Oh, right, sorry, you mean they don't?
No, they don't. You know, they don't come along, and I think they should. If you're going to bring a motion to council, you know it's going to that committee. You come along and you deal with that motion, because the presenter of that motion at council is quick to bring people into the public gallery when he knows they're not going to be discussed at the full council meeting. I think any councillor that's bringing a motion forward to council and then it's transferred or bounced to a committee should go and at least deal with it.
Oh, it was, yeah. This was already at the committee, and then this is the outcome of the motion being passed. But I take your point.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Billy. Okay, so we're proposing second, I think. Oh, sorry, you can't stand it quite quickly.
I will be very quick.
All the rules.
No problem. But thank you very much for that respect. I must say that I'm more than delighted that I laid the groundwork for this when I was vice chair of AHC. It took a while to get there, and I welcome the motion to accelerate the process. You know, it's a very worthwhile CARES in our society. Don't get much help and support from the government, but it's a small move in the right direction from this council, and I do welcome it. But I'm delighted that I took, with a lot of hard work being done over a year, that we got here and roll on. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Andrew.
Just clarify that everybody is content. Is that okay? Do you need to put your vote, or is that fine?
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Can I just point out for the record, too, Councillor Brown did attend the meeting when the notice of motion came here.
Okay, thank you. Item number 10 then is the public holiday arrangements for the Leisure and Sports Facility for 2021. Paul?
Thank you, Chair. Members will notice that in the attached appendix to consider public holiday arrangements for Leisure and Sports Services. In October 2018 and previously in 2019, public holiday arrangements were put in place for the likes of leisure and sports facilities. The appendix pretty much replicates previous years and seems to be operating a balanced approach towards operating on public holidays. And so the recommendation is to implement public holiday arrangements for next year. It's not for this year, it's for next year's public holidays as per Appendix 1.
Okay, Councillor Taylor.
Chair, I'm happy to propose the arrangements. The one thing I would say is, it's something just from feedback I've received, it's just making sure that these arrangements are well advertised, you know, because I have had complaints in the past where people have turned up the centres thinking that they were open at times and weren't, obviously. So it's just making sure that the general public are well aware of all these arrangements and in good time before they actually happen. Okay.
Okay, thank you. The seconder. Okay, thank you. Thanks, Paul. Item number 11 then is the consultation by the Food Standards Agency Northern Ireland on official controls in relation to food safety. That's Owen.
Thanks, Chair. Official controls are how the regime we apply towards food safety as a competent authority, and the Food Standards Agency are currently consulting on an update of those, so we'll just want approval to return the attached consultation response.
Okay. The proposer, proposed Councillor Gorn, second with Councillor McKellar. Any questions there on that? No?
Sorry, yeah. Oh, sorry. Just if Brexit happens and Brexit doesn't happen, is it going to have an effect on any of this? Or particularly since we have a very large coastal and fish and rain business and stuff like that, and these recommendations, because we'll see it's all to do with Europe.
Through the chair, this won't make any difference yet if there's a deal or no deal. Could have a significant impact on our service, particularly in regard to the fishing industry in Kilkeel, our glass, with export certificates, where we could be going from a position now where we issue 100 a year to potentially 60,000 a year. So we are taking steps to see if we're able to do it. If there is a deal or an extension, that won't. If there's a deal, existing legislation will stay, and we'd hope. The deal that's currently on the table would mean that we wouldn't have to put those steps in place. The way it is presently is that there's a lot of trade between here and the south, and that would become exports. So every product for every destination would need an export certificate. So it is huge. It would have huge implications. So we're paying a lot of attention to the news every day now. So, but we have been doing a lot of preparations now, both internally and with the businesses.
Is there training going on for this? Like, from issuing a couple of certificates, 60,000, that's horrendous. Like, what, like, if there's a backup plan of this? Because, like, it could come before the 31st of October here very quick. I know you're monitoring the situation, but if that is the case, like, what preparation has this council got in place for if that was to take place for staff?
We have been carrying a recruitment exercise to have people on a list that can be taken in. So they're not employed as yet, but we've done the recruitment, done the interviews, and had pre-employment checks so that if need be, we can call them in. We've also trained all environmental health staff, not just the ones who do food. We're also looking at what sort of hours we can offer. There is also the possibility that the 60,000 mentioned, that's based on information we got from the industry. However, it's quite possible a lot of that trade will not be able to continue. But for an example, as the law stands, after they get their export certificate from us, they then have to give 24 hours notice that it's coming. So for products like fresh fish, the quality is of the essence, a lot of that trade may not be able to continue in those circumstances. So this is the difficulty we have. We have been doing, a huge amount of planning in a vacuum. To say if we have to do this, we will receive funding for DERA. It's not a statutory function to issue the export certificates. We do it on behalf of DERA, and we will receive funding for the time we spend. But there is still the possibility, with whatever steps we put in place, that resource won't be enough to deal with the demand. And we don't know. We're doing what we can. It's very, very difficult. You heard news reports a couple of weeks ago. For DERA, we're given the indication that for the certificates that they would have to issue, that they would only be able to issue about a fifth of them. They need vets to issue theirs. We need environmental health officers to issue ours. There's a shortage, and as it stands, we just have to suck it and see to see what we'll be able to do if we have to do it. So.
Okay, Councillor McMurray.
Thank you, Chair. Again, just to be in brief, I think part of a lot of this was dealt with at the SPNR with regard to the risk register. So, I mean, again, so kind of from that, we're very aware that the council officers, this isn't a problem they're making, so to speak, so we do appreciate the work, but we also do appreciate how difficult it is for them, given the uncertainty, to prepare in this regard. Thank you.
Okay. Item number 12, then, is the consultation management measures for widely spread invasive alien species in the north.
Thanks, Chair. This consultation is from DERA on the management measures. What you'll see in the consultation response we're sent back is we felt that Japanese knotweed is a species that we would have significant complaints about. It's not covered. And also we've asked that they look at increasing the legal powers, because as it stands, most of the problems that we would have people complain about hogweed or whatever, it's on private ground, and the controls, legal controls, are very, very limited. So we've asked in this consultation that more stringent measures should be applied to try and control this.
It's probably not specific to the consultation, but it is to do with hogweed and Japanese knotwood. And while it's ground that we obviously feed into the consultation and that there, it's maybe what we as a council are doing. Because I do know of one particular area in Warren Point that stretches across four housing developments actually, and where it's actually impacted on people buying their houses because of the presence of it nearby. And I know back Legacy Council, just before it finished, we did try to tackle the particular area in Warren Point, and we were to do it over a number of years and spray it and everything else, but that's fallen by the wayside and it's coming back ever as bad as it ever was. So I'm wondering, from a council perspective, what exactly can we do other than just say, you know, and I do know on this occasion it is on private land, but it's, I think, between ourselves, the housing executive and whatever the other housing association is, I think we do need some way of tackling, because simply for everybody to wash their hands of it is not good enough. And if it's a case of us come back, maybe this is not the appropriate committee, but through neighbourhood services, maybe that we start as a council to look to see what is best practice out there and how to tackle it. And I know it takes a number of years, but it has to be sprayed on a continuous basis. So just obviously I'm not looking at an answer tonight, but maybe how do we set something in train now that starts for us as a council to look at dealing with it?
Certainly, if it's on council land, we do take steps to control it. And I think we've generally found if it's housing executive, generally, I'm not saying particularly with that one in Warren Point, or road service land, they're usually quite good about trying to do something, particularly the hogweed. The issues are where it's on other land. I said we would generally hope if we ask the housing executive to have it removed, they would do it. So, and if it's on our land, we will take steps to control it. There's an awful lot of it that we'll see is on riverbanks, and the Rivers Agency will take nothing to do with it. It's whatever landowner is up to that side of the river. And this is where the issues, and that's part of the problem, obviously, that spreads because it's not controlled, and it spreads very easily then.
I think what I probably get that it's more to do with housing development and
Yeah, just echoes the sentiments of Councillor Rowan. We had five or six major incidents of that up along the Ardcarn area, Carnegat. A number of areas where children were actually very badly affected by it during the summer months. And it took a long time, as Mickey has outlined. It's very difficult to get people to nail down who the landowners are, who's responsible. And maybe there is a need, and I would second the proposals that the Councillor Rowan has made to coordinate something, even if the council took the lead on it, to try and find out how we can act on this quickly. Because the stuff that I reported, it was 4 or 5 months before it was acted on, and the thing that just grew out of beyond control. And you know, it was right next door to a special school at the time as well, and there were children in the area playing about in the housing estate straight across from it. It wasn't private land at the time, and it took a bit of time to get it sorted out, but it was eventually done. And thankfully, whenever that was done, DFI did their part of the road where it was impacted as well, and there appeared to be some degree of a coordinated effort. So I think going forward there's great validity in what Councillor Rowan said, and the council or somebody trying to take some sort of degree of a coordinated approach in the same way that we're talking about getting grass cut and everything else. Maybe this is something that we need to encompass within that. I agree with what everybody said.
Okay, thank you. I need a proposal and second for the consultation as well. Second. Okay. Thank you. Items number 13 to 17 are for noting, so if there's any matters arising, any questions or queries on any of those, Councillor Walker?
Sure. Item 17, the Cross Guard Community Facility. I do know my colleague had raised it at a meeting and got it tabled in relation to facilities and Cross Guard, and it was more in the diocese there were selling their community facility and that. I do understand that not in the budget and that, and we wouldn't be purchasing it and that, but I welcome the factor, and I hope the council and the officers keep lobbying the Department for Communities to see if there's money available there for the Crossgar area. Now, this is something that will not happen overnight. You know, this is a long-term movie project or aspiration. We have to look how long it took St. Fyne, how long it took Killay before that there. It was years. But if council is seen pursuing the Department for Communities in relation to a community facility in Crossgar, I think that has to be welcomed. So it does in relation to it, because the Crossgar people are saying that they're the poor relations in their wang, and that's what they're saying, you know, and we have to be seen to be working with them. Particularly the five Rwang councillors need to be seen to be lobbying that, and I welcome the fact that it's in here that you will continue to lobby the Department for Communities.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Andrew.
Thanks very much, Chair, and I do welcome the paper coming here tonight. I'd like to thank the officers for taking on board and going away to prepare this report. I do support the ultimate aim of the Crossgar Kilmore Village Plan, which recently identified priorities in the locality. And since being elected to council in 2011, I've worked alongside the communities and other councillors. In 2012, we did highlight the needs for a community facility. In fact, we had meetings in here at the time with our predecessors, highlighting the need for a community facility in Crossgar. I do welcome the paper, the overall goal, and I hope that I'm still living by the time that this facility becomes a reality, because it took since 46 years for their dream to come to reality, and I do hope that I'm still living whenever Crossgar gets. The message I get from people in Crossgar is that everywhere else gets, Crossgar gets nothing. But however, we have to work together as a team to deliver for the community, and you can bet your bottom dollar I'll be with the shoulders of the wheel with the rest of my colleagues to make that dream a reality. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews. Okay, Councillors, the items number 18 to 21 are all restricted, so just to read out the wording. So these items are deemed to be restricted by virtue of paragraph 3 of part 1 of schedule 6 of the Local Government Act NI 2014. Information relating to the financial business affairs of any particular person. The public may have a resolution be excluded during these items of business. So just ask all members of the public press to leave at this point. I need a proposal and second then to go into committee. Second. Good. Thank you.
The following was agreed. Item 18 is agreed on the proposal of Councillor Murray, seconded by Councillor Walker, to accept the business case for the provision of Wi-Fi for council-owned community-run facilities and to proceed to work with the IT department to implement phase 2 of the rollout of Wi-Fi to community facilities. Item 19 is agreed on the proposal of Councillor McMurray, seconded by Councillor Gallagher, to remove the agreement to lease the 3G pitch to Castlelong Community Partnership as per minute AHC/071/2019. And replace this with a facility management agreement for the 3G pitch. Item 20, it was agreed on the proposal of Councillor Murray, seconded by Councillor Savage, to the application being made for departmental approval to allow Murray Morning Down District Council to lease the site identified at a peppercorn rent. And item 21, it was agreed to note the officer's report.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay, thank you, Councillors, and take home.